7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother.
Welcome, friends, to episode 20. I am Daquan Watson, your host, and as usual, I have my buddy Brian Allen here. How is it going today, dude?
Hey, going well. How's it going with you?
Man, it's going okay. We have an interesting week to talk about. I mean, I'm not doing terrible, but man, it was a hell of a week, let me say that. Okay. Like, we have some fun stuff to talk about this week, for sure. Also, while we have a moment, I also want to take a second to remind everybody that we do have an affiliate link in our show notes for TCG Player. So if you buy anything there, we get a little bit of a kickback that helps the show. And we still have our Patreon page. So patreon.com/colormagic. You can find us over there. And that also helps us out. But with that out of the way, welcome, and let's have a good time this week, because man, we're gonna have some ups and downs this week. It's gonna be pretty serious. It's gonna be kind of fun. It's gonna be a ride.
You'll laugh, you'll cry.
Well, yeah. So let's start strong and talk about what did we learn this past week. Do you want to go first or me? Actually, I'll go first, because mine's kind of serious. Yours is at least more light.
Mine's the comedians being fun loving again.
All right. So, backstory here. And by the way, for those of you that are patrons, I guess is the official term over there, you actually get some further backstory and insight on some of the stuff, because we have our kind of pre-show that we record that we are now sharing with our patrons. So you can expect to hear that over there if you're one of our paid peeps. So, anyway, I'm in the process of upgrading my, we'll call it my pseudo studio. And I have some new projects I'm working on for YouTube, and I just need to get a better camera. So I'm getting the camera, the setup. And when you get a digital camera, SLR camera, like, you need different parts to operate. You have to have like a cam link and some other things to make it work right. So anyway, trying to save some money. So I'm going through all these different classified apps and stuff to find all the bits and parts that I need. Well, I find somebody that has one of the parts I want, and he's got it for like $60 or $65. But there's a bunch of others that I can get on there that are 50 to 55. But this person has like kind of a reasonable rating and everything else. And I'm like, you know what? They're close enough. Let me just go ahead and send them a message. I can probably just pick it up. So I tried to get it for like $10 off because they were wanting to ship it and all this. And I was like, well, I'll at least make the shipping free and that's fine. So I send him a message. Don't think anything about it. I go about my day. And about a day later, he responds really angry about, no, I'm not giving you $10 off. I should charge you $20 more just for even asking and being a cheapskate. And I was like, well, okay.
How dare you negotiate?
Yeah, I mean, like, but the thing is, it's his stuff. He has the right to ask for whatever he wants, right? No problem with that. I've been in the business long enough buying and selling collectibles and whatever. I am totally fine with that. So I go on about my business, working on stuff online, getting stuff all set up to stream later. And then 2 hours later, and I will preface this by saying, I didn't even respond to it. The dude had already taken it down. He had marked it as sold. Like, he obviously was upset about the whole thing, and I wasn't even going to mess with it. So 2 hours later, which is about 10 minutes before I go live on streaming, I guess this was on Tuesday night, he sends a message that censorship here. Bitch ass N-word. That's literally the message.
two hours have passed.
Yeah, like, I no response or nothing. He is already, I'm assuming he's already done with everything. He's removed his listing. Like, and that's when I learned people will get racist over $10, apparently.
Because it's not like this is an argument over that escalated through multiple messages. This just went, okay, no thanks. 2 hour gap. Racial slur.
Yeah, like, and here's the thing. Like, I'd already found other deals that were a little better anyway. And, you know, life's just moving on. No problem. Just out of the blue, I was just like, the hell? Like, what is that even about?
That's not even healthy. That's just, that anger simmered in him for 2+ hours.
Yeah, and see, and that's the kind of person I am, because I was thinking the same thing. Like, one, what type of anger are you harboring all day to even feel like that? And then secondly, what's happening in your life that, like, you send somebody an angry message, delete everything, and then still 2 hours later, like, you know what? F that guy. I'm going to go back to my phone.
Angry and racist. Not, you know, yeah. F you. I think we've all probably, like, maybe said an F you 3 hours later because we couldn't think of anything else to say. But angry and racist is, wow.
Oh, sure. And then the weird thing is, like, my initial thought was, do I want to put this person on blast? Because I almost did. I was like, okay, should I copy their info and put it up on Twitter? And I was like, you know what? I'm going to sleep on it for a little bit before I do something I regret.
Yeah.
Because I was also thinking, like, if this dude's this mad right now, like, I also don't necessarily want to deal with, like, retaliation and stuff right now. I have too many other things I'm trying to handle.
I always, you know, if they say something, especially any kind of racial slur, I always report those. If you know it's on Xbox, PlayStation, or what have you.
Oh yeah, 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 and that's ultimately what I'm going to be doing. I'm putting together a thing right now that I'll be sending it to their customer service and their community relations manager for this particular app. So it's unfortunate. Like ultimately, like I said, and the crazy part is, I'm not even mad about it. I'm more just surprised, really.
And one of the things I found is, like, people like that, that's not the first time they've done that. They've dropped the N-bomb on so many people, they will never know who reported them.
Oh, for sure.
Because they do that, you know, in so many of their online interactions.
I don't know, man. I'm just not wired that way to just carry that much anger. I ain't got time.
I don't think most healthy people are.
Wait, why don't you bring up our spirits? Tell us what you learned this week.
Well, the first reviews are coming in for the much anticipated, much maligned Sonic the Hedgehog movie, and apparently it's actually, you know, it's decent. It's tracking at around 64-68% on Rotten Tomatoes, which, let's be honest, for a video game movie, is like an Academy Award-winning number.
That's fair.
Somebody posted a comparison between, you know, Sonic and Super Mario Brothers, which I think has about a 22% on Rotten Tomatoes. Yo, to say, dude, hey, Sonic won.
Super Mario's bad, dog. Like,
because if I had, like, to, if you think about it, if you had to explain the plot of Super Mario Brothers, the video game, to someone, how would you?
I don't know, but dude. I'm surprised John Leguizamo worked in Hollywood after that movie.
Yeah.
For real.
Well, I mean, he did it's everything he was bad. Asked, you know. He's just, the fact fair. That he survived that. For example, like, when they started to, you know, write the Mario Brothers names down in the script, somebody says, oh, what's their last name? Nintendo's like, excuse us? Okay, I know their first names are Mario and Luigi. What are their last names? That was the first time anyone had asked Nintendo the question. Because for a video game, you don't need to know Mario's last name. There's no reason anyone cares.
Yeah, it's not necessary.
So it was at that moment they decided that their last names were Mario. Because they're the Mario Brothers. They would have to be Mario, right? Or else it's stupid. So that was when they became Mario Mario and Luigi Mario. And it only got dumber from there.
It's all right. They still went on to make billions of dollars off the franchise. So I guess it's all right. Yeah. But yeah, no, it doesn't surprise me that Sonic is actually doing well. Like, when people raised hell initially about just the look and everything else, the responses that the studio had sounded like they were really concerned about getting it right. So good for them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want it to be a situation where, hey, every time people complain, they go refilm the parts of the movie they can refilm. But I think for a cartoon, yeah, if you're doing basically a cartoon or video game character, and it looks literally nothing like the cartoon character or video game, you're going to have problems, you know?
Yeah, but I think from our side as a community of geeks and gamers, you know, when we're going to be angry at somebody for getting it wrong, we do need to also reward and praise those people when they listen to us and get it right.
Definitely. Because they didn't have to go back and, you know, redo all the things they did.
Oh, absolutely not. And that's the thing, right? If we just complain all the time and are always negative and they never see the positives, it's going to be like, well, what did we spend all the... I'm in that case, I'm sure it was probably another like $5 or $10 million that had to be spent to redo all that. It was like, why did we even spend the money if everybody's just going to be angry about it anyway? Though, to be fair, when I was in the theater and I saw that first Sonic trailer, I'm not even a huge Sonic the Hedgehog fan, and I was just like, whoa.
Yeah, it was scary.
Yeah, his eyes were all weird, and he had all these like weird bushy,
he had human teeth.
Yeah, that too. He had human teeth. It just, all of it was weird, man. I don't know. Just didn't look right.
It's already, you know, a hedgehog was kind of a weird animal to turn to your mascot anyway, but they got away with it. But there's just certain artistic choices that are going to ruin the whole thing, and giving him human chompers is number one among those. It was nightmare.
I just wonder, like, who in the studio didn't look at that and go like, doesn't this look a little creepy? It's almost like at some point they put enough time into it that someone went, yeah, but forget it. We'll just go with it.
You figure whoever signed off on that had probably never seen Sonic the Hedgehog. They just heard it was popular with the kids 20 or 30 years ago.
But that's my thing, though. Like, even if you've never seen Sonic, like, the visual just looked weird. Like, not even as a Sonic, just as a character. It just looked a little on the creepy side.
But if you're, let's say a 60-year-old movie exec just signing a check for this, you don't know that's what Sonic, you don't know he doesn't look like that. You've never done any of the research.
Which you probably should do if they're paying like, you $10 million.
You would think so, but this is the same industry that a few years ago said, hey, what should our big summer movie be? What are the kids into? And a room full of executives said, Battleship. And no one called them on it.
But didn't that at least have Rihanna in it?
It did. I love Rihanna as much as anybody, but she can't save Battleship.
Oh, no, I'm just saying. At least they went and shelled out some dollars to put some kind of star power in it to make it go.
That was just, even I'm going to say 30 years ago, when it was popular, shouldn't have been a movie.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Much. No doubt. So, yeah. Let's get on to some other. This is going to be a roller coaster. We are up and down and up and down today. So we're going to have another little bit of a low here. But why don't you lead us into our, we'll call it our wardrobe story of the week.
Yeah. Okay. Mary Lauk, and if I massacre your last name, I apologize. But on Twitter, she mentioned that went to I believe it was a SCG Philly, and a guy there had what, you know, it was termed a porn star shirt. I haven't seen this shirt, but apparently it did have a semi-clothed woman on it, and some people were understandably kind of creeped out by this. Talked to a judge. The judge asked the guy, you know, please, could you, you know, take that off, put it in your jacket or whatever. So then apparently the second day of the event, he shows up with a different piece of porn star looking paraphernalia.
So I have thoughts on this.
I thought you might.
So my first thought after reading the whole story, and you know, because I only saw what went down on Twitter. But going through it, I get to the end, I'm kind of like, who owns multiple jackets with scantily clad porn stars on them? That was my first thought.
With two thumbs, this guy is what I guess see so. The person doing. Yeah.
So that to
I
me
see
says
them doing that in my head.
Yeah, that says a little bit about the dude's character right off the bat, right? Like, who just owns multiple of these and then just proudly wears them out to crowded events? Then my immediate thought after that was just, I am very much in the camp of being sex positive, being proud of your body. I think sex work is work, you know, all that.
Yeah.
But you're going to an event where there are kids, there are families, you know, you don't wear that stuff to a magic tournament or to the mall or, I don't know, to the movie theater, right? Like if we're going,
I guess it depends on what movie theater.
You know, that's true. If it's an adult movie theater,
you don't wear see, you know, Frozen 2, but I guess if you're...
Yeah, but like if you're, you know, if you're going to a casino or a poker hall or a strip club, or then cool, wear it, be proud of it. It's probably an expensive jacket, whatever. But dude, how can you just be so dense to not get it?
Because, okay, first time, I guess you could say, oops, my bad, I didn't realize. Second time, okay, you're just being a troll.
Yeah, and to my understanding, from what I saw on Twitter, like, the judges that I know of that were responding that worked with or have worked with SCG, they apparently were addressing the guy and dealing with it. So, you know, credit to them. But it's just one of those things. It's just like, how can you just be that dense? And I think people defending it, saying like, oh, well, it's not that offensive. It's just a woman's body. Like, yeah, I get it. I'm not saying to be ashamed of their body or to not be proud of a woman or whatever. I'm just saying the same way I like if it was a dude in a Speedo or whatever on a jacket, like same thing. Like there are places that is okay and there's places where it's not.
Context matters, people.
Yeah. That's just a place where it's not. And I'm sure, you know, because our episode on suicide awareness somehow still got downvotes on Reddit, I'm sure we'll get blasted for this episode just for having this perspective, but whatever.
Yeah, because right before we did this, I dove down the Reddit rabbit hole pertaining to this story, and I just was amazed at how many people were defending the half-naked woman hoodie. I just was just shocked, flabbergasted, and just attacking people for having the nerve to not want to see, you know, not want to see a naked woman on a jacket during a Magic tournament. It just,
yeah,
I don't, as the saying goes, you know, your rights end where the other person's begin. And I think we would all say it is just in a, you know, in a public setting, we should have the right to not have to look at somebody's butt cheeks on a shirt, male or female. It's just, I don't understand how anybody can not see how that could offend someone.
Yeah, I did, man, I don't know. It's
and why you again? We're trying to grow the game. Why is it important to you to do something that you know is offensive? What's the payoff here? If you win this argument, what's the reward?
I feel you. I mean, I've brought that up before. Like that's one of the things for and this is tooting my own horn here, but like for as much as I have done to try to expand culture within the game, to open doors for people, to work with different people, you know, to really be a positive influence. And then every time you see something like that, it's almost like it undoes this big chunk of work that you put in.
Yeah.
And it's so damn frustrating because it's such a short-sighted move. You know, even if, and this, you know, we had that conversation, same thing about the hentai playmats and stuff, right? Yeah. Like this all falls in that same category. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not that big a deal to change one small piece of behavior that doesn't really affect you at all if it opens the game and makes the environment more friendly to more people. Like nobody, and even when the people are like, yeah, but I'm like, no, there's no buts. Like, this is literally it. If you want there to be more people, more money, more sponsors, more whatever, you got to cut the crap out.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just it at the end of the day. I mean, and we see this like a good example in I say in the real world, but like at a big time level is, I don't know, I guess it's been, golly, has it been 10, 12 years already since I had the NHL strike or whatever? Like when that happened, so many of those NHL players were basically coming around and doing interviews saying, oh, well, we want NBA money. We want MLB money. We want NFL money. But ultimately, they weren't going to be able to get the same amount of money because fighting is an integral part of that sport.
Yeah.
You aren't going to get to partner with the Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts, no. Right? Like, you aren't going to get to do a bunch of the school programs. Like, you just aren't. Like, the money and the sponsors and participants you get to work with are not going to be on the same level. And we kind of have to look at it. Like, as we're trying to grow and you're talking about Magic being an esport and you know, credit to Wizards, because you still got like Dell and some of these other people to come on and sponsor the the Mythic Invitationals last year and stuff. Like, that's great. But for us to keep getting that, we need a lot less of these stories.
Absolutely. I mean, even the people defending this hoodie, you can't tell me you'd wear that hoodie to a job interview. At least I hope you can't tell me that. I don't feel like you're getting the job unless the job is at a strip club, you know, and then it's another environment where that jacket is probably fine. You wouldn't wear that outfit, I'm hoping, you know, to Thanksgiving dinner. Because you know uncle or grandma or somebody, or heck, little brother or somebody is going to be, is going to have problems with that shirt.
But you know what, though? And I feel like I'll probably go back and read the Reddit thread tonight or tomorrow, but I would almost venture to guess the people that are trying to defend it aren't understanding the context. Like, I almost feel like when I've had those discussions with people in the past, they're defending it from the perspective of, well, yeah, but it's just an image and the person should be allowed to wear that. Not realizing that we're not saying they shouldn't. We're just saying in certain venues, there's certain things some people may not want to be exposed to. And it's a very large number of people.
Yeah. If you've reached the point where, let's say 20% of the people in the room have a problem with that, that's far too many.
Yeah, for sure. And I get it. If it's just one or two people, fine. Like, I mean, it's like the whole MAGA hat thing, right? Like, if you want to wear it, whatever, go ahead. Like, we get it. Like, you're supporting the president, fine. Like, I don't agree with the message, but it in and of itself isn't a thing that's offensive. Now, some of the behavior around it and some of the people, that's a different story. But like, all right. But, you know, so I'm not going to stop you from wearing it. I just understand where that puts you and me ideologically.
But at the end of the day, they can say, hey, you know, this is a political candidate I support. This is, you know, an ideological statement for me. Can you say the same thing about, you know, about partially clothed? But I guess technically you can say, okay, it's my freedom of speech. But, you know, again, what are you talking about? Yelling fire at a crowded theater could be claimed as freedom of speech. But why are you yelling? You know, is what you have to ask yourself at some point.
All right, let's move on.
Yeah.
Because there's still more things to talk about this week. So, on a positive side, the coverage for the, I guess I almost said Pro Tour again, Players Tour Phoenix was actually pretty good, man. It looked like they got pretty reasonable numbers. I think at one point I saw it at like 17,000 or 18,000. I wasn't keeping crazy hard eyes on it. But I think one of the things when people look and say like, yeah, but we've had previous events hit like 30,000 and 60,000 or whatever. I think the thing, like, I have a feeling the Players Tour final, which is like now what the people from all of these Players Tour events plus the MPL and the Rivals or whatever are going to play in, I think those are going to draw really big. Because what I was thinking about over the weekend was that each of these events is only drawing eyes from within a certain part of the world.
Yeah.
So now, granted, I'm sure there were some players in Asia who just wanted to see what the American players were playing or doing. But as a at-large community, I would say, most of the, I'd imagine, people in the APAC region weren't that concerned with what's going on here in the States. The same way that a lot of the average American players weren't watching all the stuff going on in Europe or whatever.
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting to see how the Players Tour final draws compared to these events. I think that'd tell us a more accurate story. I think people looking at these and expect the numbers to be the same as a Mythic Championship or a Mythic Invitational, like, you're not going to hit those numbers. And it makes sense that you're not in all reality.
As we discussed before, time zones are a real thing.
Yeah. For
as
sure.
much as I love NFL football, when they have those games in Great Britain that start at 8:30 or 9 a.m., I tend to miss those.
Yeah,
still in bed. And again, love football,
dude. Speaking of, okay, side note before we finish more on this Pro Players Tour Phoenix stuff. Being a sports fan, it's been weird living on the West Coast after living in the Central Time Zone forever.
Yeah,
because Okay, so like, I guess it was like the first, no, this is probably like the third or fourth month I'm here. People are like, hey, are you into football? I'm like, yeah, obviously, I'm from Texas, you know, whatever. They're like, okay, well, if you want to hang out with us on game days, you need to meet us at this bar or whatever. We're going to go out, grab drinks, blah, blah. And I'm like, all right, cool. It's like, all right, so we'll meet you there at like 9:30 or whatever. And I'm like, what kind of damn day drinking do y'all do at 9:30? But then I realize,
game starts at, you know,
at 10, right? Because I'm used to living in the central time zone where they start at noon. Well, here people start, you know, you got to get your pregame and tailgate on. Yeah. Like, game started 10. So it's just been interesting. You know, when I watch like a wrestling pay-per-view, now it comes on at like 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon here.
Especially now because they have 12-hour pregame shows or pre-shows. Yeah,
but it's over at like 7 or 8. So I still have my evening to do whatever I want. So
yeah.
It's such a weird thing. I mean, time zones really do matter. Like, I've almost missed events because mentally I didn't catch up to do the difference in time change, still thinking about it in central time. Like, so it's very weird.
Yeah.
But anyway, back to the event. It was one, I got to give credit to Corey Burkhart, which good for him because Corey's been a known good player for a while. And to my knowledge, I don't think he had a major top finish in one of these big events. So good for him to finally like crack that and get a trophy.
That's always awesome to see somebody, you know, who has just been right there and been right there and been right there. And then to see them break through. It just,
oh yeah.
Those are always feel good stories.
Now, his opponent in the finals, conversely, has, he's got to be considered one of the top players ever. William Jensen, baby Huey, you know, like, the dude, he's got trophies for everything now. Literally, I think he has, like, if there was a Grand Slam in Magic where, you know, you have like a Grand Prix win, a Pro Tour win, a Master Series win, you know, like a Hall of Fame, blah, blah. Like, he literally has all that. Like, it's wild to even think about that somebody has that type of hardware. And like, he's one of the few Magic players that can have a legit trophy case.
I'm amazed there's not like something that was just referred to as a Grand Slam. We got to work on that. Or like an ergot, if you will.
Yeah, an EGOT.
We need that.
But yeah, like, so the only thing really to come out of the weekend was that Demir Inverter still did well. Obviously, it's what won the tournament. Not a huge surprise. People knew it was kind of like the big deck of the week, and people were playing that. However, William Jensen brought the Lotus Breach deck, which is basically a combo deck using the obvious cards that it sounds like with Lotus Field and the new Breach from, I don't know why I'm thinking, Theros. There you go. And people were already just like, oh, this card might need to be banned and this is going on. So part of the discussion over the weekend, especially through Magic Twitter, was that nothing, like, don't touch Underworld Breach. Don't touch anything from the Demir Inverter decks and let it play out another couple of weeks. Because several people are like, oh, no, there's answers here. Oh, no, we know what to do. Or there's things that stop this deck or whatever. And people were saying, like, well, maybe enough people didn't plan for it because they were focused on these other decks at the time, or their testing went in against these different things, or they hadn't seen some of the tweaks and strategies that were brought to these decks. And so it, on the one hand, it was kind of like a little disappointing that everybody instantly went, oh, this is a big deck, we got to ban stuff. But it was also cool to see a lot of people saying, hey, yeah, let's pump the brakes.
Yeah,
there's probably some answers here. We have some ideas. Let's see what happens over the next 2, 3, 4 weeks and then make a decision.
And I've often said that I feel like if I could just, you know, if the genie showed up and granted me one Magic the Gathering related wish, I think I would want it to be the ability to put together the deck that nobody is prepared for. That just seems like, out of all the skills, that's probably the one that is gonna win you the most games, especially in the first few rounds when you're not going against, you know, the Jensens of the world. What of my friends used to refer to as like a chump sweeper, you know, like the deck that will win, let's say, 60% of your matchups against the average player.
See, that's why I chose Chris Kvartek to be my champion for the World Championships.
You did? Do you remember? Yes.
Because he's always doing his research, always putting in his work, and he's likely to come at some deck or some deck style at a little bit of a different angle, and that's probably going to give him another win or two that he wouldn't have got otherwise because of that.
And also, I think it's also me thinking like a content creator where, hey, if you have that kind of deck, even if you don't win the tournament, you're going to have great articles to write. You're going to have great Twitch streams and things, you know, to break the deck down with.
Oh, I totally get that, because I just put up a mono blue aggro deck for Standard on my YouTube yesterday, and it's already getting a lot of views just because it's a completely different type of deck.
Yeah.
But yeah, so speaking of, the World Championships are this weekend. And you pointed out a good point of discussion that Wizards had up on their Magic.gg page today.
Yeah, there's a great piece that, as I mentioned, just went up today about Marcio. You probably should say it.
Marcio. Oh, Carvalho. Yeah,
Carvalho. There you go. Yeah, I heard you say it earlier, and I was still about to butcher it. And it's, you know, called Two Careers, because it talks about, you know, his young career before, you know, before the suspension for cheating, and then how he's, you know, has kind of spent the rest of his career trying to live that down, which I guess is what happens to anybody that's had any kind of suspension or penalty in any kind of competitive endeavor. And however you feel about him, I'm just saying it's a well-written piece. I think everybody should read it. And yeah, some people are going to say, oh, well, you're trying to make excuses for him because he was young. And I'm not saying you have to like him after reading it. I'm just saying I think it's a piece that everybody should read if they're curious about competitive Magic and just, you know, also just, we talked about this a little bit on the pre-show, just about second chances. Everybody says, you know, I would say everybody, a lot of people say they believe in second chances until it's time to give somebody a second chance.
Oh, no doubt. And I think that's the part that really bothers me, because I even in my social circles, you know, I have some people who on the one hand will say just that, like, well, this person should not be condemned because whatever, they should get a second chance for this thing or blah, blah, blah. Or I messed up once, I'm trying to do better, you know, whatever. But then on the other side, say like, oh, well, he did this one thing one time, so he should just be always with that mark forever. You know, and I think that's how, like, our penal system is the worst example of that, where people go to jail or to prison, really, at, you know, as a juvenile or even at age 19 to 21, you know, they're down for 5 or 10 years, got educated, come out, trying to get themselves together, hold down a steady job, yet there's still people going, well, you were a felon once, you're always a felon. Like, doesn't really matter. And that's tough.
If this person can't get a job, you wonder, you know, what prevents them from going back to a life of crime if that's the only job they can get?
Sure. I mean, and you know, I look at it from my own personal example. Like, I mean, I never went to prison or anything, but I did a lot of dumb stuff as a kid. Hell, I probably said some things that I shouldn't have said. You know, and there's people who, especially because they know me now, are going to go like, oh, well, you know, that was in the past, blah, blah. But like, would those people say the same thing if they'd have met me back then? You know, like, maybe.
like we talked about how, you know, you can be in the car with somebody who's about to do something stupid or goes on to do something stupid.
Yeah.
And then if you're the, you know, how the law works. If you're in the car with them, you're now liable too. Let's say they told you they were going to the ATM and they walk in and rob the bank. Guess what? You were driving the car.
Yep, now, you're an accessory to the crime.
Now you got charges. A thing that almost happened to me, I was dating a girl and her and a couple of her friends, you know how people sit around and talk about how they hate somebody and how, you know, they're going to, oh, I'm just going to punch her in the face. I dropped her off at somebody's house. Her and her friends literally were going to beat the crap out of this girl. As soon as I realized what they were going to do, like, no, I'm leaving right now. Y'all can get in the car, but no, I'm not. I didn't drive you over here to jump on somebody. That was never the plan. No.
Oh, dude, I can do you one better. Like this is when my sister was still in school. She has a couple of roommates, and she sends me a message like freaking out. She like calls. She's like, hey, I need to talk to you. Like, I just had the FBI come by the house. Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, yeah, I'm like, oh, God, what did you do? Right. Like, I'm like, but it turns out her roommates were apparently forging money.
Oh, God. Like,
yeah, they were somehow like printing it or something. And I guess because they were idiots, they kept using it at the same two or three places or whatever. And of course, eventually got backtracked to them. But because she lived with them, they gave her like the third degree, like put her through the ringer. Cause, and she was literally like, no, I had no idea. Like, I wasn't involved. I don't own any of this stuff. I did not go to the mall with them, you know, whatever. But she almost was in trouble just because she was friends with these people.
Because people always assume, well, how could you not know?
Yeah. Like, so, I mean, but those situations happen where people get in trouble and then we hold that against them. So, you know, in magic terms, and again, I'm not saying you get a free pass just because you were younger. So please do not take it this way. But again, we have done some dumb things in our youth. And
most of us just weren't on a stage where it's being talked about on the internet or on podcasts.
Yeah, for sure.
I am so glad I didn't have Twitter when I was 16. You know?
Oh, I'd have been done. But to have that happen, get your punishment, serve it, and then you are on the straight and narrow sense. That's how it should work.
Yeah.
You know, like granted, you don't ever want to have to levy the punishment to begin with. But if you have to, if somebody serves their punishment, they're apologetic for it, they learn from it, and then they're a better person, then great. That's what we should be asking of a lot of people. I mean, that's the whole point of having the punishment to begin with. Like, yeah, we'd like the person just to be gone or whatever, but I'm like, you know what? Sometimes you just do dumb things and you have a lapse in judgment. You know, there's an old country saying I had somebody tell me when I was growing up. They said, you know what? No matter where you live, locks keep honest people honest. And the context we were talking about is like, you know what? Just don't put the tempting situation in front of people because sometimes they're just going to make the wrong decision.
Yeah.
And at least if you put those safeguards there, you can keep people from just doing the dumb thing. And, you know, it's not necessarily the best way to treat things, but I get what he was saying in that moment. So, yeah, good for them. I agree with you. It's definitely a cool story. People should definitely go check it out. If for nothing else, just to know more about some of the people that are competing and some of the history. You know, I think we have a lot of new Magic players over the last 2 or 3 years that may not know some of these people. So it's a good way to get informed and kind of be more invested in what's going on. And also, while I'm thinking about it, credit to Wizards of the Coast, because one of the big gripes people had, especially over the last 2 years, if we've been making this transition in competitive play, is they didn't build up the stars enough. They didn't talk about the players. The World Championship didn't have any meaning. You know, all these things. And they have really put together some good stories. They put together some promotions. Yep. They've been pumping the hell and promoting this championship. You know, like, people know what's happening. Actually, even the local promotion, don't forget about that. Like, they're doing viewing parties at a lot of stores this weekend. So if you go play in a standard event at these stores, you can get a alternate arts. I can't remember the card, but there's a card you get for playing and you get to watch the World Championship. So it's encouraging people to view it, building up the brand, building up the players and the ambassadors. Like, this is what you should want the company to do.
Yeah. Like we've said several times during this podcast, if you're going to tear them down when they do something wrong, and we're going to, you got to also build them up when they do something right. And this is an example of something that they did right. So we're giving them a shout out.
Now, since we're talking about second chances and careers.
Oh, boy.
The XFL was hot, man.
Here we go. I knew it was coming. I saw this on the run sheet. It's like, oh, God. I knew we weren't going to agree.
I told people I was going to report back on it.
You did.
So give me like 3 minutes here. I'm going to make the sales pitch.
Okay.
All right. First off, it is cool because there are some people who are ex-college stars. Some are ex-NFL pros. Several of the coaches are like legend local NFL players, which is cool. So that's a draw. They have a cool kick. I don't know if you've seen that. Did you see their kickoff?
I didn't see the kickoff. The game had already kind of started by the time I tuned in.
So the way it's set up is the kicker's still in a normal kicking position like NFL, right? On like the 30-yard line or whatever.
Okay.
But then the two teams line up their other players minus their returner who just stays back in return space. They line up around like the opposing, I think it's 30-yard line. And then they can't move until the returner touches the ball. So you reduce those like collisions that cause a lot of those injuries and whatever. Yeah. And you make the return just more exciting.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely, because, you know, the return has always been one of the most exciting plays in football, if not sports. So that's cool.
Yeah, so that's fun. You can go for 1, 2, or 3 points after a touchdown, whether you want to try to make the play from the 2, 5, or 10-yard line. They don't kick extra points.
Ah, the old NFL blitz rule. Okay.
Yeah, so you do that, and then they didn't get to an overtime situation, but their overtime's cool because you basically play 5 attempts each to see if you can score from the different things, and like you pick and choose whatever, and then whoever has the highest score or whatever at the end. And if it's tied, you go another like 3 plays or something or whatever. So that's pretty cool too. So they have a better overtime thing. You can actually hear plays being called, which is cool because they have like the coaches mic'd. When every play, oh, there's also only 2 challenges instead of 3, but every play is reviewable effectively. I think except for a couple of random ones like pass interference and something else, but generally all the plays are reviewed and they just go straight upstairs and they even have a camera and the guy's mic'd or whatever so you can hear him talking through it or whatever.
Pass interference is not reviewable?
Well, I think if it's called, I think if it's just like one of those things where they don't call it, like they're not going to go back and say, hey, this is a pass interference.
So no New Orleans Saints rule. I hate it already. Although, exactly. Although the NFL massacred that rule this season.
But another cool thing is the play clock is only, I think, 25 seconds. And the way they compensate for that is they have all of the skill players have a headset in their helmet, as opposed to NFL where it's just the quarterback. Like, all the receivers, tight ends, running backs, quarterback all have it. So the quarterback only has to talk to the lineman. Now, they'll still, like, quick huddle sometimes. You can see, you know, they want to call an audible or something. But usually it's just cool. He kind of checks points and then goes up to the lineman, says something, and then they're back at the line. And then inside of 2 minutes, the clock stops after every play until the ball is reset. Then it starts back up. So you have a really cool comeback period, which is pretty sweet. So yeah, like there's just tons and tons of things they've done to make the game more interactive, more interesting. It was pretty entertaining. There was one game that sucked, but the other three were pretty good.
Unfortunately caught the one that sucked.
Yeah, I think the advantage they have over whatever that other, the AAF, I think is what they were. I think the benefit they have is they only have 8 teams. And what that does, I think it lets them control their money better, and it doesn't spread their talent too thin. Because the other league, if I'm not mistaken, had either 12 or 16 teams. And I think it really showed.
Yeah.
Right? And so this is a much stronger setup for them. And if I remember right, they said something about Vince McMahon's already like dedicated with the networks to like a 3-year deal or something. So
that's also a good thing because they didn't have that the first time around. So it just made it really, really easy for NBC to say, no, not doing any more of this.
But yeah, I think it's fun. If you just want some fun football, it's actually still very much American football, just with some very cool rules additions. And the pace of play constantly moves. I would say personally, because for me, it was a good middle ground between college ball and NFL play. So, yeah, I will be watching this week.
Okay.
I will even consider maybe going and getting one of the $25 tickets to go watch the Seattle Dragons this weekend.
I, as you might imagine, have a different take on the old.
Yeah, go for it. Feel free,
I
mean, man.
I'm a huge wrestling fan. I love Vince McMahon, but, you know, one of the things they're selling, the minimum salary, I think, is $55,000, but that assumes that you make, or I think that's what they're saying, is like, guess the average salary. But
yeah,
they're saying that includes win bonuses. Obviously, everybody doesn't win. And you know,
no, when I did the math, you could make more than that with the win bonuses, I believe, because I saw that over the weekend. I remember looking that up too.
Yeah, but I think the base salary before bonuses is something crazy low, like 27,000 or something. Insane.
Yeah.
That's to me for any kind of pro football, where with everything we know about CTE, I consider that to just be unconscionable. That to me made it kind of hard to watch, because already even NFL football, I get they're playing for millions, but you have to ask yourself, how much would you pay for the ability to walk if you don't have it? You can't put a price on that. How much would you pay for the ability, you know, to remember your own name? You can't put a price on that. You know,
I mostly agree with that. I think the 55K average is fine. I don't think it's good. I just think it's fine. The quarterbacks make significantly more. I think their average is like 110 or something. I think it was the number I saw. They also have a much shorter schedule. I believe they're only going to play eight games each, something like that. Yeah. 7 or 8. Because, again, they only have 8 teams. So you're going to play your round-robin games, I think another one, and then you play whatever your playoff or championship game is. And that's all right. I would expect going into next year, depending on... because the ratings were pretty good for them this week. We'll see if it carries over the next 2 or 3 weeks. Because, you know, when it's new, people will watch it as a spectacle.
Yeah, because the first time the XFL came out, it did great that first couple of weeks, and then just every week it lost more and more till it was just not sustainable.
Yeah, I'll say this though. Like, if you're, I know some of you listening to this are not sports fans, but I would recommend going and looking up the ESPN 30 for 30 about the XFL. It is really, really good.
I've seen that one and I concur. It is excellent.
Yeah, it's really informative. And it tells you a lot about just business, about like how times lined up with like the viewing, and then like doing it on Saturdays when SNL was supposed to be kind of, like, there's all this like deep behind the scenes stuff that led to it falling apart, but none of the stuff you think it is.
And also the other problem I had is, you know, I think when I try to watch these secondary leagues, what I learned is, like, while I love football, I think I watch for the stars. I don't watch because I necessarily have any love for the wishbone or to see it. I love to see, you know, what somebody like Ezekiel Elliott or Saquon Barkley does in terms of just completely, you know, faking out and, as they say in basketball, breaking the ankles of the person trying to tackle them. And just to me, we know how much money Vince apparently is putting $500 million of his own dollars. I know he knows you need stars because he runs WWE. How does he not get Johnny Manziel out there? Or, you know, or Tim Tebow. What kind of rating would they have done if they had convinced Tim Tebow to come play this?
You know what, though? I almost expect you'll see that in season 2.
You think so? I've heard Manziel's publicly said he wouldn't play there. Of course, Manziel
What I'm thinking, though, is it's a combination of giving yourself a comeback play. Because, like, don't spend it all up front, and then if things start struggling, you have nowhere to go, right? So,
yeah.
If you're slumping at the end of the year and, okay, we need a big boost for next season, we can go find some of these people and you have something to carry it a little bit. The other is you also have to build confidence in the league, right? A bunch of people just saw last year what happened to the AAF.
Yeah.
So there's probably people that just didn't even want to participate, so their name wasn't attached to it. And that's everything from players all the way down to just trainers, you know? Probably just didn't want to be part of it if it fell apart because they saw what just happened. Or they were just part of the AAF and got burned.
Well, yeah.
So they don't want to do it again. I mean, you got people out there like Dez Bryant, you know. I'm just saying. Go to Dez and be like, hey.
He said he was going to try out as a kicker because apparently he can kick a little bit. And then he no-showed his workout. So I don't know exactly what. I know somebody told him, hey, maybe you don't want to be a part of this.
But, you know, there's some dudes that still do some balling in their free time. Like, Chad Johnson's still out there playing around on Twitter. He probably could still suit up.
Also, I know Vince has already said, you know, we're not going to have any protests, no social issues. I see why he's saying that. I know he's appealed to a certain demographic. But are you going to get a higher rating because nobody's taking a knee?
No, to be fair, though, that was more a statement. Like, to me, that felt like he was just saying it in the moment when that was, like, the big discussion publicly 2 years ago when they first started talking about this. I don't even think it would matter now. Like,
because let's be honest, what number would Colin Kaepernick do? Even the people that hate him would watch his first game because they'd be cheering for him to fail.
And all right, sorry to disappoint everybody, but due to some technical difficulties, we will call them, some problems we ran into here at the 11th hour, I'm kind of going to finish out this episode myself. Unfortunately, I won't have Brian joining me. But the topic we want to touch on is actually fairly light for our dinner table segment, but it came down to the event structure for these Players Tour events, or other large events for that matter. And the argument was very much, the initial argument was kind of what makes sense as a better cutoff to qualify for the second day? Should it be 5-3 or should it be 4-4? And the argument really came up, it sounds like, because people were concerned that when you go 4-4 to make day two, you don't really have a shot at top eight or some of the big money. And if you get your loss in the first round or two of the day, you lose your opportunity to be able to participate in other big qualifiers or Grand Prix or whatever's going on alongside the event. And then the question starts becoming like, well, what's truly better for the players? And when I thought about this, I started thinking like, well, think about it from, I'm trying to figure out the best word for it, but somebody who lacks resources, whether that be the location as far as distance, you know, stores or venues to qualify in, time, money, whatever. If you put them in a situation where, let's say 4-4 is the thing to qualify for day two, and they're struggling on, okay, well, should I sign up for this other side event or should I just keep playing the main event? Because you only get one shot at the main event. And if I'm still in contention, I should really be playing so I could try for this trophy and get qualified for the Players Tour finals and the MPL and all this stuff. But if they choose wrong, that first round and second round, like, they're devastated. And now they've lost a second qualifying opportunity to get back on the train, so to speak. And it was tough because I don't even know, like, I hate doing things just to, like, protect people from themselves, because, you know, I think we have a lot of situations in life where that's the case, where we probably don't need it. But I think in this situation, it makes a little more sense to almost say, if there's a side event or a major side event, then the qualifying break for day two should be 5-3. Because 5-3 is likely going to hit money and everything else, and you're going to get paid. So, like, that makes sense. And then you don't have players, you reduce the amount of feel bads around what should otherwise be a fun and positive weekend, and they can jump into the second event. If there's no side event, then sure, just make it 4-4. You have more players eligible to play day two. They're going to be on the fringes of even hitting money anyway, but at least they get to make the most of their opportunity. And this solves a few things because you do have players for some of these that had to go way out of their way already to even qualify for the Players Tour. Or, yeah, I actually got it right and didn't say Pro Tour. But then they also had to travel a significant distance or time or use vacation from work or whatever to even get there for that weekend to participate. So you allow them to maximize their opportunity for maximum prizes or maximum qualifications for future events, which is probably the way we really want to be going. And it was interesting because I hadn't really thought about it initially from, I guess, a position of benefit or privilege or whatever, as much as like, well, what about all the players that are barely able to make all this happen? How can we best maximize their decision and make the event as fun as possible for them? Or, like I said, just give them more opportunities. I think that's kind of what we should be aiming for. It's interesting. And it's one of those things, I don't blame Wizards for not thinking about it this way. Because, like I said, I hadn't even considered it until just this weekend when I saw the discussion happening. But I don't even know how people would feel about that. I think it would be cool. Like, if there's a major thing alongside, like, say, if there's a Grand Prix along the Players Tour, then the cutoff's going to be 5-3. If there's not, then the cutoff's going to be 4-4. I think that's just a simple way to do it. people know ahead of time. Like, you can almost even prepare your odds for playing in a side event or whatever as the day goes on. So, like, I don't know. It feels like there's a lot of benefits there. But we went a little heavier earlier in the episode, so I thought this was kind of a good way to wrap this one up. Just kind of a thinker conversation piece, I guess, more than anything else. But that's going to do it for us this week. We already have a little bit of a long episode, especially after last week. Also, I want to thank all of you who went and listened to last week's episode. If you haven't, please go do that. You know, I don't think we should ever stop the conversation around suicide prevention and awareness. And that's a long episode, but I think every minute was worth it in that one. Otherwise, if you haven't, please check out our Patreon and just hit us up on social media. We have on Twitter, you can find Color of Magic. You can also find me and Brian individually by our normal handles, but you can find Brian at DL Caesar, just like the Roman Emperor. He is on Twitch and on Twitter, and he also has his family channel that they're doing really well with on Allen's Ever After. You can find me, as always, PowrDragn on most social media stuff, and I have a lot of cool videos going up on YouTube right now. I just put up some new deck techs, and I'll have one coming up soon about the first thing you should do if you want to open a game store business, but probably any business for that matter. I think it applies. But that's going to do it. So wherever you're listening from, whenever you're listening, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
If you have a chance, please check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/colorofmagic. You can also find us on Facebook at Color of Magic. We're also over on Twitter and Twitch at Color of MTG. And we have a website you can check out, colorofmtg.com. Please share our episode with your friends and help us grow our base. As always, every little bit helps, and we appreciate your support.